The Further Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring John Patrick Lowry as Holmes and Lawrence Albert as Dr. Watson.
My name is Dr. John H. Watson, and I shared the adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Holmes was fond of saying he did not consider modesty to be one of the virtues. Indeed, where his own extraordinary deductive gifts were concerned, he was certainly far from modest. But there were occasions when this attitude led to disaster, and I can think of no better example than the case of Miss Vivian Vedder. It was in September of 1885 that she called upon us at our Baker Street lodgings.
Please, Miss Vedder, take a seat, and tell us what has brought you down from Margate at such an hour.
I prefer to sit here, if you don't. What makes you think I come from Margate, Mr. Holmes?
No magic, I assure you. I see half a return ticket sticking out of your glove. The metal buckles on your shoes show signs of salt corrosion.
Oh!
And anyone with a passing familiarity with Bradshaw's railway guide would know that Margate is the only coastal town from which you could have arrived at so early an hour. Now, please tell us how we may assist you.
It is a most delicate matter, gentlemen.
You may rely on our discretion, Miss Vedder.
Thank you, Doctor. The problem is not my own.
Whose, then?
A dear friend of mine, Mrs. Eloise Rydercroft. I'm so worried for her.
You think she might be in danger?
I don't know what I think, Doctor. All I know is that she hasn't been the same since she and Caspar returned from the Riviera a fortnight ago.
Caspar is a husband?
No. Mrs. Rydercroft's husband is dead. Caspar Gaunt is her brother. Since coming back to England, she's been troubled, distracted. She's even declined to assist the Reverend.
The Reverend?
The Reverend Nathan Kellerman of the Mission Church of Christ the Healer. He travels all over Africa, bringing Christianity to the savages. Whenever he returns to England, he gives lectures on his experiences to raise capital for his next mission. Eloise has been so giving of her money and her time, but now she's lost interest altogether, and it's down to me to organize everything. I have urged her to confide in me, but she refuses to talk about it. I suspect it might be something to do with Caspar.
Why so?
He is a dissolute young man. More than once he's found himself in quite serious financial difficulties.
And the Riviera would be just the place to get into such difficulties.
Mrs. Rydercroft's late husband was quite wealthy, and she's always cleared Caspar's debts in the past. But I'm afraid that whatever he's done this time might be criminal in nature.
Why this concern, Miss Vedder?
I beg your pardon, Mr. Holmes.
Why would you wish to retain me in order to investigate a possibly non-existent matter on behalf of an acquaintance?
Isn't the notion of Christian charity sufficient reason?
No.
Very well. Eloise is my friend. Has been my friend for many years, even through a very difficult period in my life when no one else wished to know me. It involved a young man whose romantic overtures I declined. It was many years ago, but public opinion was very much against me.
But Eloise Rydercroft stood by you.
I owe her more than I can repay. Can you understand that, Mr. Holmes?
I believe I can.
In the 15 years we've been friends, Eloise has never kept a secret from me.
To the best of your knowledge.
If there is something she feels she cannot tell me, then it must be serious indeed. Gentlemen, I urge you to help me.
Well, we shall certainly do so. Eh, Holmes?
Actually, Watson...
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. My heart feels lighter already. If you want to speak to Eloise, she keeps a suite of rooms at the Imperial Hotel in Margate. Well, goodbye, gentlemen.
Watson, would you show Miss Vedder out?
Put your mind at rest, Miss Vedder. If any man can get to the bottom of this problem, that man is Sherlock Holmes.
Why, thank you, Dr. Watson.
Well, sounds like an interesting case. What will be your first step, Holmes?
My first step, Watson, will be to go to the tobacconist's on the corner, purchase a half pound of Grosvenor mixture, and then settle down with an improving book and a full pipe.
But how is that going to help Miss Vedder?
In no way whatsoever, so far as I can see.
But you agree to take the case. What am I to make of this, Holmes?
Anything but such a petulant face, old fellow. I was, in fact, on point of declining the case when your sense of chivalry got the better of you. Very well. Since you are so keen to please Miss Vedder, I suggest that you should be the one to call upon Mrs. Eloise Rydercroft.
In Margate?
I understand from your client that that is where the lady can be found.
Hmm.
Problem, Watson?
No, no, not particularly.
Can it be that the hero of the Battle of Maiwand is frightened of a seaside resort?
Firstly, I was hardly the hero of Maiwand. Secondly, I'm not frightened. I just don't care for Margate, that's all. Too many holidays there as a child. If I saw those wretched caves once, I saw them a dozen times. I never liked the seafront. Sand gets everywhere.
Well, it's the wrong time of year for taking the waters. No doubt you can conduct your interview in more convivial surroundings.
Just a moment, Holmes. You didn't say why you were on the point of declining Miss Vedder's case.
Did you observe the expression on her face as she spoke to us?
No.
Nor did I. She chose the one chair in the room with its back to the light.
Why would she do such a thing?
To prevent us from reading her expression too closely. She wishes to intrigue us, Watson. Artifice is the most powerful weapon in any woman's arsenal.
So because of that, you'd ignore Mrs. Rydercroft's predicament?
If indeed there is such a person, I'm sure she'll recover. Women are like cats. They invariably land on their feet.
There speaks the voice of the lifelong misogynist.
You do me a great disservice, Watson. I don't dislike women. I merely distrust them. They are unreliable.
Very well, Holmes. I'll go to Margate alone. I'll send regular reports.
I don't feel you have to, Watson. I assure you that the outcome of this matter is of little interest to me. Affairs of the human heart are your territory.
You'd have me believe you possess no feelings at all.
I possess them, but I consider them something of an inconvenience. If I could have them removed altogether, I would.
Mrs. Rydercroft, I have come at the request of your friend, Miss Vivian Vedder.
Vivian? And what is it she wants of me?
She's very concerned for your well-being.
Well, that's very sweet of her, but you must tell her that she has nothing to worry about.
Are you troubled by Mr. Gaunt's activities?
Casper? Casper's my brother, Dr. Watson.
I am aware of that.
Any matters relating to my brother are of my concern alone.
Ah, so it does concern him.
You presume too much, Doctor. Really, you do.
Miss Vedder told Mr. Holmes that you're a changed woman since your sojourn in the south of France.
Mr. Holmes? Sherlock Holmes?
The same. What occurred there, Mrs. Rydercroft?
So you're that, Dr. Watson. Yes, of course.
Mrs. Rydercroft?
Doctor, I must beg for 24 hours' grace.
24 hours? I'm afraid I don't understand.
Come back here at the same time tomorrow evening. It's possible that I may have a message of great importance to relay to Mr. Holmes. If not, then Vivian needn't be concerned about anything other than my eyesight.
Well, can you at least give me some sort of indication?
I'm afraid not. Too much depends upon it.
Can I help you, sir?
I hope so. I wonder if you have a room available for the night.
I'll just check for you,
just
sir.
Just going up to see my sister, Mr. Kildegin.
Mr. Gaunt. Mrs. Rydercroft says that she would prefer not to speak to you.
Oh, don't worry. She doesn't mean it. Women, you know, don't know their own minds.
She was quite specific on that point. I'm afraid I really must insist, Mr. Gaunt.
Damn your impudence, Kildegin. I demand to see the manager.
I am the manager, sir.
Oh, are you?
I'll take care of this, if you don't mind.
And who the devil are you?
Someone who'd like a word in private with you. We can talk in the bar.
I'll have a scotch and soda if you're buying. Easy on the soda.
I didn't come here to drink. I came here to talk.
No, bad show. I take it you're an employee of one of my creditors?
And if I am?
You'll have to break my legs, I'm afraid. I just don't have the money. But I can get it.
From Mrs. Rydercroft?
Oh, of course, you'd have to refrain from breaking my legs, or I couldn't get upstairs to see her. They still haven't installed a lift here. I think it's that old-fashioned approach that appeals to Eloise.
Mr. Gaunt, what happened on the Riviera?
What usually happens? One gambles, one loses.
Then why gamble if you always lose?
I don't play to win. I play for the exhilaration that comes from the possibility of winning. We're none of us immune. You strike me as the sort of chap who puts his wages on horseflesh. Are you quite sure? You're one of my creditors.
Did I say so?
Then who the devil are you?
My name is Watson. I'm acting in your sister's interests.
And what's this about the Riviera?
Your sister came back from there profoundly troubled.
Don't I know it? There was a depressing journey home.
Do you know what upset her?
I didn't think it polite to ask.
Perhaps you didn't care?
Perhaps.
Perhaps she was worried about something or someone you'd become involved with.
Look, if you're prepared to buy the drinks and I'd sit and chat with you all evening... But I have some debts I'd like to clear.
The manager said Mrs. Rydercroft doesn't want to see you.
Oh, she gets like that every few months, but it passes. She'll give me a check just to be rid of me. I guarantee it.
Excuse me, manager?
Yes, sir.
The gentleman who asked to speak to Mrs. Rydercroft, Perhaps if I were to accompany him...
I'm afraid you're too late, sir. Mrs. Rydercroft has gone.
And I'll tell you what became of Eloise Rydercroft in just a moment.
Do you have Volume 5 of The Further Adventures of Sherlock Holmes? This is our latest CD collection of Sherlock Holmes dramas produced for Imagination Theater. Volume 5 contains The Problem of Pennington Flash, A Strange Case of Lord Holworth's Kitchen, and The Adventure of the Great American. All on a single CD and priced at only $9.95. You'll hear John Patrick Lowry as Sherlock Holmes and Lawrence Albert playing Dr. Watson. And order Volume 5 of The Further Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, visit our website, SherlockHolmesRadio.com, or send a check for money order to Jim French Productions, P.O. Box 75296, Seattle 98175. And be sure to mention you're ordering Volume 5. That's SherlockHolmesRadio.com on the web, or Jim French Productions, P.O. Box 75296, Seattle, Washington 98175. Now we return to Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Eloise Rydercroft had given no indication of where she might be going at that time of evening, but the manager of the Imperial had observed her hailing a cab. The only course of action open to me was to try and locate it. I was unwilling to trust Caspar Gaunt out of my sight, so I insisted he remain at my side.
Yes, I'll remember the lady, sir. Picked her up in front of the Imperial. Asked me to take her to the seafront. Funny time of day to be taking a dip.
What's your name, cabbie?
Bassick, sir.
Bassick, I want you to take me to the exact spot you took Mrs. Rydercroft, and hurry.
He's paying.
Eloise? Eloise, it's Caspar. Mrs. Rydercroft? Mrs. Rydercroft?
Eloise? Oh, my God. Doctor. Doctor, over there.
Don't touch her, Mr. Gaunt. Let me look at her. She's been stabbed. I'm afraid your sister is dead.
Oh, no. Who could have done... Wait a minute. Look at this. She's written something in the sand.
What does it say?
Just one word. Killer.
We spent a dispiriting night at the Margate police station telling what little we knew. Once it was determined that neither of us could have been responsible for the lady's murder, I was allowed to send a telegram to Baker Street. Next morning, I received a most welcome visitor.
I owe you an apology, Watson. It seems that you were right about this case, and I was wrong.
I'm afraid it gives me little comfort. I was unable to prevent the murder of Eloise Rydercroft.
And now the tide will have washed away any evidence at the scene of the crime. What was the cause of death?
Well, we'll have to wait for the coroner's report, of course, but it appeared to me that the weapon must have punctured her liver. She died of severe loss of blood.
And would she have had time to write the word killer in the sand?
I believe so, yes.
There's no possibility, I suppose, that Mr. Gaunt might have done it while you were examining the unfortunate woman.
It was a matter of a few seconds to determine that she was dead, and there's no way he could have done it in that time without me noticing. Besides, I discovered grains of sand underneath the forefinger of her right hand.
Splendid, Watson. You're really coming along.
And in any case, why should he want to write the word killer?
Why should she, for that matter?
To identify her murderer, I imagine. My killer was, something like that.
She wasn't dictating a letter, Watson. Her life was ebbing away. She had mere moments in which to leave behind a clue. Why attempt such a long-winded message?
Well, you put it like that.
What did Mrs. Rydercroft say about the Riviera?
Now, she said she thought she might have a message for you in 24 hours.
Really? Obviously, she had suspicions she wanted to confirm or refute before consulting me. She must have seen something there that gave her cause for concern.
Or thought she saw something. She said Miss Vedder might not need to be concerned about anything apart from her eyesight.
Caspar Gaunt was in the south of France, was he not?
But I was with him the whole time on the night of her murder. And if she'd seen him getting up to something, she could have asked him about it at any time.
A very reasonable objection, Watson.
So we're no further on.
I don't propose to eliminate Caspar as a suspect until I've had the chance to speak to him.
Well, take care when you see him. The fellow means mischief, I'm sure of it.
This fellow means the same. By the way, I sent a telegram to Lestrade. I expect him down by the next train. I'm sure the local force will be glad of some assistance from Scotland Yard.
Just a moment, Holmes.
What's the matter, Watson?
Sand in my shoes. You see what I mean? It gets everywhere.
We're in luck. There comes a cab.
Dr. Watson! Dr. Watson!
The driver appears to be acquainted with you.
It's Bassett.
Dr. Watson! Help!
Bassett, whatever's the matter?
In the cab. Look in the cab!
Great heavens.
Watson, am I right in thinking that this is Caspar Gaunt?
Well, I'm afraid you won't be speaking to him after all, Holmes. His throat's been cut.
Hi, this is Dave Adams, executive producer of Imagination Theater. Jim French and I would like to help you enjoy Imagination Theater anytime you'd like. We'll make you a member of our growing club of modern radio drama fans by sending you the current week's double feature movie for your mind on CD or cassette. Then you can listen again and again to Harry Nile, Sherlock Holmes, Kincaid the Strange Seeker, or any of the hundreds of mysteries we broadcast. To join, just call our toll-free number at 1-800-229-7234 and have your Visa, MasterCard, or Discover card ready. It's just $24.95 a month. That's just $5.75 a week, and you can cancel anytime. Just call us and tell us whether you'd like CDs or cassettes. The number is 1-800-229-7234. That's 1-800-229-7234. And never miss an episode of Imagination Theater again.
Would you like to hear four new adventures of Sherlock Holmes never before released to the public?
The door opened only a crack, through which an alarmed and bloodshot eye appeared.
We're offering you a pair of CDs, each one containing two dramas, and each one priced at just $9.95, including postage. The first CD contains the Tutman Gallery and the Estonian Countess.
With that warning, Holmes disappeared through the side door and into the blackness beyond.
Then on the second CD, Dr. Watson gives you the chilling adventure of the Silver Siphon and the adventure of the missing link.
Not long after Holmes received the threatening note from the man who called himself Professor Rennes Borsham, he bounded back up the stairs and stood in our doorway, his expression darker than I had ever seen it.
To order these two CDs fully dramatized with great actors, send $9.95 for each CD to Jim French Productions, P.O. Box 75296, Seattle 98175, or visit SherlockHolmesRadio.com and use your credit card. Now we return to Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Now, Mr. Bessick, you were on the scene when both Mrs. Rydercroft and her brother were killed. Is there any reason why I shouldn't just sling you in a cell right now?
I don't know nothing about it, Inspector, I swear. This Mr. Gaunt, he looked me up this morning. Said I was someone he thought he could trust. He wanted a job doing, offered me double the fare if I told no one about it. Well, it's the end of the season, see, and work's not so easy to come by.
Just tell us what the job was.
Well, I was to take him to the town square. When we got there, this other fellow got into the cab with him. And Mr. Gaunt told me to drive around.
Lestrade, may I?
Help yourself, Mr. Holmes.
Bassick, can you describe this man?
He was a little man. Slight.
His features?
Well, he was all bundled up. I never saw his face.
I see. Go on.
Well, I drove around for half an hour, like I was told. And then this other man calls out in an hoarse voice for me to pull up just for the library. He gets out and wanders off. Well, I waits a bit for more instructions. But Mr. Gaunt don't say a word. I looks in the cab, and I saw...
We know what you saw.
You say that the murderer was small and that his voice was hoarse. Think carefully, Mr. Bassick. Are you absolutely sure it was a man? Might it have been a woman in men's clothing?
Why, I suppose it might have been. I'm afraid I can't be certain, sir.
All right. That's all for now, Bassick. Go home.
Thank you, Inspector.
So, where does this leave us?
Evidently... Caspar saw something in that message that told him the identity of his sister's murderer. Rather than tell his suspicions to the police, he contacted the killer in an attempt at blackmail.
So they arrange a meeting to discuss terms.
Caspar imagines he's safe in a moving vehicle with Bassick as a potential witness.
But his intended victim wasn't taking any more chances. It was a clean cut, left to right.
So the killer was right-handed. I don't suppose your client, Miss Vedder...
I observed her as she left Baker Street. She hailed a cab with her right hand.
Doesn't miss a trick, does he, Doctor?
I fear I'm missing one at the moment, Lestrade. Watson, is something troubling you? Not more sand?
Huh? No, Holmes, no. I was just thinking of Caspar Gaunt.
for the right price, he was prepared to let the person who killed Eloise go free. To betray his own sister like that makes him as guilty as the murderer, in my opinion.
That says maybe, Doctor, but he isn't the murderer, is he? No offense, Mr. Holmes, but if we don't make a move soon, there might not be anybody left to arrest.
Yes, we do seem to be running out of suspects, Holmes. And we can hardly suspect Miss Vedder of killing Eloise in order to take over her good works.
Watson, you've hit on it. I've been criminally slow. The answer was in front of me from the very beginning. You see before you the biggest fool in Margate. I deserve to be kicked all the way from here to Baker Street. Come, we must speak to Miss Vedder at once.
You're a little early, gentlemen. The lecture isn't due to begin for another half an hour. Oh, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, you are here about poor Eloise.
Miss Vedder, I have a question for you.
Ask it, Mr. Holmes.
On the day you visited Baker Street, you took care to stay in the shadows. Why?
Is that all you want to know?
That is all.
I was in a considerable hurry to catch the train that morning. I didn't have time to apply any rouge.
So you sat with the sun to your back to hide the fact?
Why, yes. Is it important?
Not in the least. The auditorium is this way.
Well, what was that all about?
Just confirming a suspicion, Lestrade. The ways of women are hard enough to fathom at the best of times. Throw vanity into the mix and you have chaos. You see what I mean now, Watson? Even when their intentions are pure, they're unreliable.
Was that what you meant about the answer being in front of you from the beginning?
Heavens no. When you mentioned Eloise Rydercroft's good works, I was reminded of a particular name. Reverend Nathan Kellerman, I assume?
I am he. If you gentlemen don't mind waiting outside for the time being.
I'm afraid we haven't come here to listen to your lecture, Reverend. I'm Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard, and I'm investigating the murder of Mrs. Eloise Rydercroft.
Yes. Poor Eloise. What can I tell you?
Well, I don't really know. Mr. Holmes?
Would that be Mr. Sherlock Holmes, the detective?
It would. I am less interested in your relationship with Mrs. Rydercroft than I am in your connection with an Australian by the name of Roy William Neal.
Neal? I don't believe I've ever heard of such a gentleman, but because then I've never been to Australia.
I've heard of him, Holmes.
Of course. I forget that Watson spent several years in the colonies. Doctor, perhaps you would enlighten us.
Well, Neal was the scourge of Australia. He was a confidence trickster who preyed upon lonely women of means. One of his tricks was to...
Yes, Watson?
Was to assume the role of a clergyman collecting donations for his overseas missions.
Neal eventually made Australia too hot to hold him, and he dropped out of sight. I wonder whether he might have relocated to England.
Now, how could I possibly know that, Mr. Holmes?
The fate of Eloise Rydercroft has its origins on the Riviera. She saw something there that upset her deeply.
Or someone.
Perhaps, Mr. Neal, she saw you at the gaming table, spending the money she had given you to further the cause of Christianity in Africa.
I'm afraid you're mistaken. My name is Kellerman, not Neal.
She was deeply troubled, and on her return to England, she learned that you were making another of your fundraising visits to Margate. At first, she wanted nothing to do with you, but then her sense of charity got the better of her. What if she had been mistaken? Perhaps her eyes deceived her. So she asked to discuss her concerns somewhere secluded, say, the seafront at evening time. She didn't count on the strength of your desire to avoid prison.
Goodness, what an immoral existence you have me leading. God will forgive your accusations, of course. In time, perhaps I might.
I can manage without your forgiveness, thank you.
I must confess I'm a little disappointed in you, Mr. Holmes. For the world's greatest detective to seem quite happy to build a case entirely on supposition.
What would you say, Reverend, if I were to tell you that in her dying moments, Eloise Rydercroft wrote your name in the sand?
Forgive me, Mr. Holmes, but I'd have to say you were lying.
Nevertheless, it's true. In the few seconds that were available to him while Dr. Watson was examining the body, Caspar Gaunt obliterated part of his sister's dying message so that it read Killer instead of Kellerman.
Why would he do such a thing? Have you asked him?
Mr. Gaunt is dead, as well you know.
Dead? Oh, my. Well, that seems to be that. You're welcome to stay for the lecture, gentlemen. Any donations will be gratefully received.
Gaunt believed that if he prevented the police from seeing the one piece of incriminating evidence against you, he would have power over you. Like his sister, he fatally underestimated your ruthlessness.
Proof, Mr. Holmes.
Do you deny the accusation?
Most emphatically, I do.
You did not go to the seafront last night to murder Eloise Rydercroft.
I have been nowhere near the seafront since my arrival in Margate.
I see. Then would you be so good as to take off your shoes?
What tomfoolery is this?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to insist, Reverend.
Thank you. May I? You see, as my good friend Watson pointed out to me, a visit to the seaside can be quite an inconvenience because the sand gets everywhere. Even into your shoes, Reverend Kellerman. Or perhaps they went to the seafront without you.
You have heard The Margate Deception, written by M.J. Elliott. John Patrick Lowry was heard as Sherlock Holmes, and Lawrence Albert was Dr. Watson. Also in our cast were Rick May, Kimberly Colburn, Michael Morgan Dunn, Tony Dupay, Joan Newlin, and myself, Dennis Bateman. The Further Adventures of Sherlock Holmes was produced and directed by Jim French. The characters of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson were created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and were used in novels and stories by him. Use of these characters in this radio series is by arrangement with the estate of Dame Jean Conan Doyle. This is Dennis Bateman speaking.
And this is Dr. John H. Watson. I've had many more adventures with Sherlock Holmes, and I'll tell you another one when next we meet.